This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by a suite of professional-grade products from Protocol for Life Balance, which helps support optimal cardiovascular health. Ubiquinol, natokinase, and MK7K2. They play a central role in cellular energy production and maintaining proper blood flow and arterial elasticity, but they're only available from healthcare practitioners. But they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance for more information and to order.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I am Layla Mutin, weighing in with you this week about important topics. If you'd like to email me a question or a topic of interest, radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. I want to dive right into it. Now, increase exercise is linked with lower sleep apnea risk. You know what sleep apnea is, right? It's snoring, but it's not snoring. It's stopping breathing while you're sleeping. And that wakes the person up before they start breathing again. Meaning, that's a truck rolling by. Okay. Meaning, they never reach deep, deep restorative levels of sleep. And when you have sleep apnea is a risk factor for high blood pressure, hypertension. The good news is exercise can help you with that. So could dropping 5 to 7% of your weight. That could all help you with that. So increased physical activity is associated with a lower risk of obstructive sleep apnea, which is a common related breathing disorder. It's a sleep-related breathing disorder. And this is according to a new study published in the Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine. This is coming out of Integrative Practitioner. For the study, researchers reviewed lifestyle, medical, socio-demographic, and sleep health data collected from more than 155,000 adults participating in the Ontario Health Study. Based on the physical activity of participants with and without sleep apnea, the investigators determined that a modest increase in physical activity, including walking, is associated with a 10% reduction in the risk of developing sleep apnea. The authors found that adding 20 minutes to a daily walk and increasing vigorous daily activity by only 8 minutes would be enough to achieve a lower sleep apnea risk. The finding is independent of other known risk factors for sleep apnea like sex, age, ethnicity, and obesity. It's estimated that more than 29 million American adults have sleep apnea. Wow, that's a lot. And many of them are undiagnosed. Untreated sleep apnea is associated with an increased risk of heart disease, stroke, high blood pressure, and other potentially serious conditions. Think about it. If you have sleep apnea and you're very drowsy during the day because you're never achieving deep levels of restorative sleep, it would be scary if you're falling asleep behind the wheel of a car, right? If you're driving. So the cross-sectional population-based study analyzed baseline questionnaire data from 155,448 adult residents of Ontario, Canada. 60% were women and 40% men. And their mean age, their average age, was 46 years old, and about 75% were white. About 6.9% of participants reported being told by a doctor that they have sleep apnea. Those with sleep apnea were more sedentary, sitting for a median of 4.4 more hours per week than those without sleep apnea. Due to the cross-sectional nature of the study, the authors were unable to make temporal inferences on the observed associations between physical activity and sleep apnea. However, they report that previous studies also have suggested that physical activity can reduce the severity of sleep apnea. Many thanks to Catherine Rushlow at Integrative Practitioner for that bit of news. So, what else does sleep apnea do? It's going to raise your cortisol levels. You've heard me talk a lot here about cortisol because it's important. And what do cortisol curves tell us about health? The adrenal hormone cortisol impacts nearly all the body's systems. Cortisol levels fluctuate throughout the day. It normally peaks in the morning hours and it bottoms out at night when it's time to go to sleep, right? It's higher in the morning. Why? It wakes us up. We're ready to get up, start our day. It's supposed to be a little higher in the morning, and it goes down as the day goes on, reaching its bottom point at night so we can go to sleep. Now, in studies, deviations from this pattern are associated with signs and symptoms of adrenal dysfunction. Results of one such study indicated that a flattened cortisol curve statistically predicted poor survival time in patients with metastatic breast cancer. Natural killer cell numbers and activity were also decreased. When we have a flattened cortisol curve, everybody, it means adrenal stress. You need some amount of cortisol, again, peaking in the morning and then leveling off and going down at night. But when it's flattened, the adrenals are exhausted. And this predicts poor survival time. In this study found in patients with metastatic breast cancer, natural killer cell numbers and activity were decreased. In the patients studied, 70% had flattened cortisol curves, presumably due to the physical and emotional stress of their diagnosis and their treatment. Flattening of the cortisol curve has also been shown to predict early death from lung cancer and has been associated with low T-cell lymphocyte counts. These are important white blood cells, important immune factors. So what are cardiovascular implications? In a study of healthy individuals, diurnal cortisol patterns were measured for 2 years, and participants were then followed for 6 to 8 more years. Participants were mostly middle-aged, average 61 years old. Flattened cortisol curves correlated with mortality from all causes, including cardiovascular deaths. This is how important it is, the health of your adrenals. In a 2018 study of police officers in the United States, shows a higher prevalence of cardiovascular disease compared to that of the general public, thought to be related to high levels of stress. An atypical or flatter waking cortisol pattern predicted a significant worsening of brachial flow-mediated dilation. This is a biomarker of cardiovascular disease that has not been diagnosed yet, a subclinical cardiovascular disease, during a 7-year follow-up in men, but not in women. Similar associations of cortisol with disease have been found in populations other than police officers. Let's talk about cortisol in or adrenal function in diabetes and depression. A blunted cortisol curve may also be correlated with diabetes and higher hemoglobin A1C in individuals with diabetes. Hemoglobin A1C is a marker of average blood sugar, average blood glucose in a 3-month period, in a 12-month period. So a blunted cortisol curve may be correlated with diabetes and higher mean blood sugar levels in those with diabetes. Some researchers consider HPA axis, that's hypothalamus pituitary axis, dysregulation to be a critical link in the high prevalence of coexistent depression in diabetes. And this is based on the results of two studies. In the first study, diabetic persons reported greater depressive symptoms and higher stress than did healthy controls. A second study of psychophysiological stress revealed that both glucocorticoid and mineralocorticoid sensitivity decreased in healthy controls, but did not change in people with diabetes. This is associated with adrenal function. Participants with diabetes showed blunted stress responsivity on a range of measures, including systolic blood pressure, that's the top number, diastolic blood pressure, that's the bottom number, and heart rate, as well as elevated cortisol levels. And the authors hypothesized that diabetes is characterized by disruption of stress-related processes across multiple biological systems and increased exposure to life stress, with chronic allostatic load providing a unifying theory. So diabetes and chronic stress, think about that. So measuring cortisol over the course of a day may predict health outcomes, both for patients with disease and for seemingly healthy individuals. And understanding the factors that affect cortisol secretion can inform appropriate treatment interventions. Post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, a severe form of psychological stress that affects 3.5% of U.S. adults, also affects 8% of pregnant women. Cortisol is an important biomarker for perinatal and developmental research. In utero, elevations of HPA axis hormones, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis hormones, are associated with adverse perinatal outcomes, including preterm birth and early illness and death, early morbidity and mortality. An interesting 2018 study suggests that women with the dissociative subtype of post-traumatic stress disorder, a complex form associated with a history of childhood maltreatment, may be experiencing toxic levels of cortisol in early pregnancy. Wow. Studies on childhood maltreatment and other adverse childhood experiences and toxic stress continue to evolve, as some research suggests that these experiences may be linked with disease across the lifespan. Very important. And hey, we're in a pandemic. Many are coming out of lockdown. Everybody is reevaluating how to live, working from home, when schools will reopen, how children will go back to school. the chronic stress of having to homeschool your children, the chronic stress of having to work from home, how your lifestyle has changed, all of that. There is more PTSD going on now, in my opinion, than what they're talking about here. They're talking about PTSD affecting 3.5% of U.S. adults, a severe form of psychological stress. But I think PTSD is growing even more, right? And the unrest happening in our country, right? That's contributing to our stress. So the 2019 Stress in America survey finds that for the average American, remember this is pre-pandemic, this is 2019, the study finds that for the average American, personal sources of stress remain high. Think about that. In 2020, they're even higher now. Key sources of stress include the political climate and healthcare costs, with many Americans reporting that they need more emotional support to help deal with the negative effects of stress on the body. And now in 2020, even more than ever, right? So the importance of addressing toxic stress has only grown. And as more and more studies continue to link stress to disease across the lifespan, how can we clinicians screen for high levels of stress in their patients? And I'll tell you, now that we're seeing patients again in the office, my first question is often, how are you doing during this pandemic? How has it been for you? Are you anxious? Are you afraid? How are you dealing? And I get answers across the spectrum. Yes, I'm anxious. Or nah, I'm all right. It's good. We're going to be fine. You know, I get across the continuum of answers from very anxious to I'm going to be all right. That's what I'm seeing currently. And this is our first week open. And I'm talking the second week of July after the July 4th holiday. We are open. So what can be done to mitigate the effects of chronic stress? And the functional medicine model shows clinicians how to identify the sources of stress in each unique individual, because, you know, we all have our own personal way of dealing with stuff. And, you know, what is the best way to measure cortisol levels? We like the saliva cortisol test. It tells us much better than a blood test, because you're collecting your saliva at different times of day, starting in the morning and several times during the day. I think that gives a real picture of what your cortisol, your individual cortisol levels are doing and how they're doing. And how to identify different types of dysfunction that can be associated with these results. So this is an important tool in our toolbox in studying the effects of stress, because it's very important, not just the level of stress in the cortisol, but also how we respond, how we react to that, and different ways to deal with your stress, changing our reaction to it, meditation, exercise, getting adequate restorative sleep, taking care of sleep apnea if you suffer from sleep apnea, a nourishing and self-nurturing form of nourishment is a good healthy diet. These are the different ways in which we can help to restore adrenal function. When you see a flat curve like that on a cortisol test, it tells us a lot. It really informs us as clinicians about depleted adrenals and how to get that function back. And it has to do with restorative micronutrients and restorative adaptogens and a very restorative taking good care of your adrenal function. It's that type of a diet. And if you're having trouble with adrenal function, or you think you are and you need testing, you can call our office. Come and see us, 212-779-1744. Speak to Grimaldi. She will set you up. If you can't come to New York, you can certainly have a telephone appointment with me. If you want to see the doctor, you need to come in. If you want to see Dr. Hoffman, he needs to perform a physical exam. You need to come in. But I have clients and patients all over the country. You can set up, very easily set up a phone appointment with me. Call the office and speak to Grimaldi. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.